Lake Effect Weekend returns on WUWM. I'm Bonnie North. As a student of material culture, contributor Jennifer Field spends a lot of her time studying objects. In this installment of It's a Material World, however, it seems the object has its own agenda, albeit a somewhat ambiguous one. The face jugs of 19th century South Carolina are some of the most mysterious pieces of functional decorative art in American history. The exact purpose of the jugs, created by enslaved African-American potters, is still being debated by art historians. But there's no question about their artistic value. The size and shape of these clay vessels vary. They can be the size of a gallon of milk or as small as a perfume bottle. Some have large holes and one handle. Others have small holes and two handles. The differences are endless, but the one thing all the face jugs have in common is, well, a face. And like people, no two faces are the same. The eyes and teeth, which are made out of white clay, are the most striking features. They're full, expressive, and menacing. The faces demand you treat them with respect and challenge you to figure out their meaning. Several of the vessels are currently on exhibit at the Milwaukee Art Museum. So for a little context into this enduring mystery, Jennifer Fields turned to Claudia Mooney, curator for the Chipstone Foundation. Mooney says understanding the use and purpose of each unique jug is not as plain as the look on its face.
Face jugs were made for a period of about 20 years in Edgefield, South Carolina. They appeared around 1860, and they disappeared around 1880 or so. So even though they are still being made, it's a completely different object. It's still a vessel with a face on it, but it doesn't have the symbolic power that the original ones do. So they were originally made by slaves and later free African Americans. For a really long time, people didn't know why they came about or what they were used for. All we have is this one quote from Colonel Thomas Davies, who was a plantation owner and pottery owner in Edgefield. And he said he refers to these as grotesque water vessels meant to resemble Africans. Now, we have to think this is 19th century South Carolina. You kind of expect a racist view of these objects, but it's really important to know that these are not racist objects. They're made by African Americans for African Americans and have an African background to them. So the first thing that we have to think about with this quote, if we put aside the racist lens through which it's told, is that these objects are really small. The one we're looking at is 4 inches and 3/4, for example. Most water jugs at that time are like the ones in this picture with Rich Williams. They're at least 1 to 2 gallons. If you were a slave going into the field, you wouldn't take a teeny tiny jug with you. That wouldn't last very long. So why would he have thought that? Why would Thomas Davies, who owned a pottery and had utilitarian pottery being made in his pottery, why would he have thought that? And our research has pointed to the fact that he was probably told that by the slaves. At this time period in the South, anything that looked African was destroyed. The whole point was to westernize the slave, to make them less savage, in quotes. So we think that the way that they were able to get away with this, in a way, was to tell all the white plantation owners, the white masters, oh, these are just silly little water jugs, ha, ha, ha. So they could keep them and were actually used for a lot more serious ritualistic purposes. So they're coded objects. They have a covert and an overt meaning to them.
So like the quilts.
Like the quilts,
the stories.
Like the spirituals, like the Brer Rabbit stories. It's exactly the same tradition. And you see it all over slave culture. It's a way to survive.
Are there any that have any evidence of what was stored in them?
Well, one of ours had an acorn and a desiccated piece of paper in it. We don't know what the paper says because it's in such bad condition. But we do think that these are probably conjure jugs. So we know that in 1858, the Wanderer, which was a slave ship, illegally landed in Jekyll Island in Georgia. Now, this was about 50 years after the importation of slaves to America was made illegal. And the way they got away with it is they took a luxury yacht out of the New York City Yacht Club, and they retrofitted so the bottom layer was just, you know, little cubbyholes, I guess, in a way, to store slaves. But they all dressed in yacht clothes. The first floor looked like a luxury yacht. They sailed with the New York Yacht Club flag all the way to Africa. And they picked up 487, mostly Congolese slaves. We know that at least 100 were sent to Edgefield. And of those, we have records in the potteries of some of them working in the potteries. And the Congo people, Congo with the K, meaning the tribal groups, do have this belief in Ninkisi. And Ninkisi are spiritual containers. And even though here in the exhibit we have an image of a wooden nail Ninkisi, and that's usually what people refer to, a Ninkisi can be a cloth bag, it can be a ceramic pot, it can be anything as long as it's activated by an Nganga diviner. So we think that the way that this worked was the Africans on the Wanderer came to Edgefield. The Wanderers told the slaves at the time of their Ninkisi idea. We know from WPA slave narratives that the people in Edgefield at this time were highly superstitious. They already believed in conjure. They talk about carrying conjure bags so that they're not hit by conjures. They talk about going to the conjure man or conjure woman if anything is going wrong, either for protection or for revenge against somebody. So we know this was already a really big common belief in South Carolina. So then you come in and you tell them about these Ninkisi that work in a very similar way. And thus we think that the face jig is kind of an adaptation or an evolution of the Ninkisi idea. If you take the idea of conjure and the idea of the Ninkisi and put them together, you get the face jug. So this face jug has writing on the back. And the writing took us a really long time to figure out what it said. At first we thought it said Squire Peter, then Squire Posey. But when we turned it upside down in the sunlight, we noticed that it said Pofu. And Pofu just seemed like a gibberish word. A quick Google search yielded that Pofu is a town in Congo. And more research yielded in Swahili and possibly in Kikongo, it means blind or blindness. This jug in particular is the only one in the whole exhibition that has the eyes colored in black. So we think that those two clues, especially the eyes colored in, probably are saying that this particular jug was a conjure for blindness.
What's going on in your head as you're going through this and you're looking through this that drives you to continue to look?
It's just so exciting, and it's such a mystery. It's like a puzzle or a treasure hunt. You find one more piece, you want to find the next one. You want to find the story. And the way that I keep thinking about it is, you know, these are faces, they have mouths, and their story has disappeared. We want to return a voice to these faces that have stood silently for so long.
So was this something in your blood? Do you see yourself saying goodbye to face jugs anytime soon?
Or? Oh, no, I'm going to keep working on this. We're trying to get a dig started at a site down in South Carolina, and I'm going to keep working on this because I still have more I want to know, and I can't let go. They're like my babies now.
Material culture contributor Jennifer Fields produces and curates the series It's a Material World. That project is funded by the Chipstone Foundation, a decorative arts foundation whose mission is preserving and interpreting their collection, as well as stimulating research and education in the decorative arts. Jennifer Fields spoke with Chipstone curator Claudia Mooney. Are things looking up for the Milwaukee Bucks? And will the Brewers soon be waving a white flag? Those two questions are answered next on Lake Effect Weekend, right after this short break.
Don't you hear my heart whisper through your window, Emmeline? It's a lovely night, Emmeline, to meander with me.